You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 566. Oh my God, we're going to start over.
Are we, though?
Off to a great start. Hello, and welcome to episode 566 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by Mr. Fosma Moon and Seth Miller.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Good. I've never seen Foz in like sunlight. Like you have like nice natural light.
Well, it's that time of day. My office faces south, so I will get sunlight in here all day.
That's nice. That's very nice.
I live in record during the mornings and not the evenings more, so Foz can be well lighted.
Yes, yes. If we were doing a video podcast. What do we got going on new this week? Quote of the week?
Question of the week.
Question of the week.
Okay. I threw this in here, and you guys are unprepared. I like it that way.
Okay.
Would you eat White Castle sliders from a vending machine in an airport?
I wouldn't eat White Castle sliders, period.
I wouldn't eat them from a vending machine. I've been to White Castle. I don't find White Castle super appealing, but I would eat there.
Okay.
Why? We're
apropos of nothing. No, Boston, I believe it's in Terminal A, the Delta Terminal. White Castle has a vending machine now.
They couldn't get Shake Shack to show up. Like,
well, that's an interesting one, because Shake Shack is in Boston. They definitely have one like at the in Terminal C near the CV connector or Go Connector or whatever. But I am sad to say is the best breakfast sandwich in the airport.
That sounds surprising.
Yeah, they actually cook up a decent bacon egg sandwich kind of thing. And significantly cheaper than the other ones that I found in the restaurants around there. But anyway, that's my 25 for 25 experience coming through. I actually tried a lot of different restaurants in the city.
But wait, are you actually, so you're officially done?
I am now actually officially done. My Ryan Bingham days are over.
There you go.
I had finished, but they, through a friend, I learned that they hadn't credited my 24th flight correctly. They didn't log me getting to Fort Myers, but they got me coming back. So, and admittedly separate tickets and whatever, but sent in the documentation. They found my ticket number. They credited it. I have received the link on the thing. I got the email telling me I've got 25 years of status, all those good bits.
Nice.
So, yeah.
The immediate email after that was, we're going out of business.
Oh, that'll take a couple years at least. Yeah, I don't, 25 years is a long time. I'm not sure it'll be there. That
yeah. So let's go back to sliders. Right. So they have a vending machine full of sliders.
White Castle vending machine full of sliders.
I mean, even the vending machine, like those cool robotic coffee things, I kind of steer clear of.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. Like, I'll buy an electronics doodad from the Best Buy vending machine, but I don't know that I want to buy food from a vending machine.
Does the White Castle machine ask for a tip?
Good question. I don't know. And who gets it? The guy who loads it or the guy who programs it? I will say, from a food vending machine's perspective, Asia certainly has plenty. Japan, Korea, whatnot. Although, I feel like I interacted with fewer this trip than I have in past years. But France has an interesting collection of vending machines, in my experience. Like, a pizza vending machine, a baguette vending machine. Along the coast, when we were there a couple summers ago, there was an fresh oyster vending machine.
Interesting.
Which that makes sense. It's like for the locals to be able to go in and the shop owner can have it stocked, but not have to actually be there to work the shop.
Yeah. It's kind of like one of those like roadside vegetable stands where you leave your money and there's no one at work. Yeah.
Honor system, but this one actually has some electronics associated with it.
Yeah.
I've seen the pizza vending machines in the Milan airport in Mapa.
Yeah. St. Louis airport has one also, actually, now that I think about it.
A pizza vending machine?
Yeah. Cause I was, 2 years ago when going out to California, I took a bump and rerouted through St. Louis on Southwest, and it ended up, we landed basically as everything was closing at like 6 p.m. on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Or on a Saturday, I couldn't get dinner. And I was able to beg the burger place, maybe actually it was a Shake Shack, bringing this full circle, I was able to beg them to make me one last meal. I was like, yeah, just give me a burger, whatever, whatever. And they came back like, all we have is chicken. I'm like, good, cook that. Like, we're not taking anything new out of the freezer. This is the last thing that's thawed. It's like, that sounds like dinner to me.
Chicken or fish.
Yeah. But I walked past a pizza vending machine at one point and was like, no, just not.
I think the concept is, it's okay. I think for a lot of people, it's kind of seen as like, you go to a restaurant that's right here and pay similar prices for something that's fresh cooked, maybe. But at the same time, it's all Sysco food.
I would like to believe that most restaurants where I order a pizza, it's not pre-frozen, which is how I have to assume the vending machine works.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Foz?
I mean, I in places like Newark, the one thing I would say, the vending machine would be more consistent in the quality of food.
That's probably true. So, I mean, that's a good question for this White Castle piece. Are they just steaming them then? Are they frozen and then they steam them? Because that's kind of how they make them anyway.
I would assume so, but I read a funny headline and then wanted to have an amusing conversation with you guys. I didn't really do much research beyond that. Sorry.
Yeah.
And how often does the machine get cleaned?
That's another good question.
Well, it's brand new, so, you know, at least once.
Oh, man. Let's talk about Alaska. They made some announcements out of Portland and Anchorage. So they're going to start Anchorage to Boston, Boise, and Spokane seasonally. And then Portland to Painfield, Bellingham, Pasco go year-round. And then Jackson Hole is a seasonal route from Portland.
Aren't they also adding Philly and Baltimore from Portland?
Yeah, those were announced a while back.
Okay.
Those look to be seasonal only right now.
You're finally getting some love.
Yeah, if they were year round, it'd be great. But they're seasonal. So, people were very excited about Bellingham because of how long of a drive it is. It's about a 6-hour drive if traffic's bad. So, people I talked to are pretty stoked about that, even from the Portland area. Painfield is struggling. Like Frontier dropped it, or they're dropping it.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, the Everett Painfield thing is interesting to me. They, Propeller Airports, which is the name of the private company that runs the passenger terminal there, put out a release highlighting all the connection opportunities this creates for passengers out of Everett to not have to go all the way down to SeaTac and still actually get places, but really looking at it as a beyond Portland offering. And with the construction, can we say completed? Mostly completed? Vaguely done?
It'll be fully done at the third quarter of 2026.
Okay. So, but with the construction predominantly completed at Portland and Alaska starting to ramp back up, it's connecting flow in the bank system there. So it is, and as we have oft talked about, Seattle's full.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's the thing is, like, if you're given the choice between, I'm going to go from Pasco, because Pasco has flights to Seattle, that Pasco to Seattle to onward, or Pasco to Portland and onward, people are going to choose Portland. Just because it's a better experience, less crowded. I would say now the issue at Portland is from a TSA perspective, it's the banking system has really been rough. Like, there's been hour to 2 hour long waits at security for the last few months. It's starting to like let off a little bit, but I think Christmas will be rough again. And then it'll be interesting to see how it does kind of in the shoulder season, if it gets better, because everything leaves at like 7:05. So if you're like, everybody's showing up for these 50 flights that Alaska has, it's a lot of people at security.
Yeah.
So
good for the connectors, though. They don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. I mean, Anchorage, Boston to me is an interesting one. Spokane is an interesting one like that. I get it. It's seasonal, but that's like, are you really getting enough traffic?
I think they said Spokane is a return. This is a flight they've operated previously.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I thought I saw that in the release. Maybe I missed.
It's only a 175.
That's a 175. I didn't realize that. What's Boise? Is Boise a 175 too? That's got to be stretching the limits of a 175.
Boise is a 737. Spokane's a 175. Boston is a 737. Both Boise and Spokane are twice a week. Boston is once a week. That Boston flight, Boston to Anchorage is longer than Boston to London.
Wow.
Distance wise.
Wow.
So, you know, for everybody who says they'll never fly a transatlantic in a single aisle plane, you also can't go to Anchorage anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it would be interesting. You can do Trans-Pacific and Transatlantic pretty much on a 737 and get major hubs out of it too and not have to hop around, because they do Anchorage, Honolulu, and you can get on the Ion Hopper.
You can also fly like any of the, how many West Coast destinations to Honolulu?
Fair.
Or anywhere in the islands.
But you could do a Transcon now, like through Anchorage. Think about it.
Through Anchorage, yeah. Instead of just flying across, fly, put it
up nice and over. Yeah.
A jig in your hitch.
Yeah.
Hitch in your jig, whatever. Like,
man, build a trapezoid.
I've done that routing before. So, you know, who might have complained? But
you've done Anchorage, Honolulu?
Yeah. I did it like the week after Labor Day, maybe 2014, 2015. It was like the first year that you could get the $200 credit on an Amex card.
Oh, yeah.
With an airline, or the second year of that. And I made Alaska Airlines my airline of choice because I hadn't used it yet. It was like, it was September. I called while I was sitting in the airport ready to go, made Alaska Airlines my airline of choice, got on board, and then explained to the flight attendants that I wanted to buy the first 35 drinks for whoever ordered them and used my $200 credit to buy drinks for a bunch of random strangers on the plane.
Did they know what to do with that?
It took us a couple rounds of what? But we got there.
Did 35 people buy drinks?
It took longer to get through the 35 drink credits than I thought it would.
Yeah.
The first round through, it was only like 10 or 12 people.
Wow.
Maybe 20, but it took like 2.5 cycles for me to actually hit the $200 limit. It's $6 a drink or whatever.
Yeah.
So,
Emirates Skywards is having a platinum auction. What is this?
You can buy platinum status. And not only that, you're buying access to special account numbers. And it's like 7000000 or all sevens with a zero at the end or some other interesting collections of numbers. I think figured Tommy would be interested in the one that's all sevens, but maybe not. But what's interesting about it is, A, it's pretty expensive, but you know, it's diamond status, so fine. But it's an auction, and depending on how much you pay determines how many years of platinum status you get.
Hmm.
And so if the auction closes at, you know, one of the lower tiers, you might only get 3 or 5 years of status. If you end up paying, I want to say it's $400,000 for 20 years of platinum status. And it's a charity auction, so like, cool. But, you know, they're not pocketing the cash, at least. But it's an interesting play, and it's a very expensive. I think, right, it's like 1.5 million dirhams, which is $400,000 or something like that.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. The unique numbers is interesting to me. Like, do people really care that much about?
Apparently in the UAE, there's a big thing about vanity numbers and license plates and things.
And so having your Emirates number be vanity is seen as...
I mean, yeah. Also, we are old enough to remember the United Continental merger and the absolute debacle that was the Flyer Talk forum. Some people realized they were going to have to lose their United freaking flyer numbers and get one that had letters in it from Continental.
Yeah, I remember that. Do you remember your United number, your old one? You do, Foz. Well, you flew United a lot, though, too. So,
yeah, I for a while after I did, but I was always a Continental, not a United guy, so no.
Yeah, I remember my Continental number.
I mean, I'm sure I have the card here somewhere. Hang on.
I hope you remember your Continental number. It's the same number.
I mean, sometimes I forget it.
Hang on. I've got one of my old cards here. Let me just find it. I just pulled out a stack like 2.5 inches tall of frequent flyer cards. Diamond Club.
I stopped my luggage tags.
Nice. How upset were you, Foz, when the old Miles plan numbers went away? Were you upset? Or did you care because you flew both?
I didn't care. It's just a number.
Yeah. Spirit, not dead yet.
Hooray. I am goofy. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good for people who work for Spirit. I don't know.
It's good for consumers also.
That's fair.
But yeah, there was some rumor, I guess last weekend now, the weekend of the 13th, that they were going to go under because they had a debt payment due and some money that hadn't been restructured sort of situation. They got that fixed and got access to an additional $50 million immediately. And that was part of a $100 million tranche of funding from their debtor in possession, basically the people funding them through the Chapter 11. The other $50 million is to be released pending progress in restructuring or other strategic initiatives or some sort of funky language like that, which is the fancy legal lawyerly way of saying, or if they can negotiate to get bought out, merge or whatever.
And going into last weekend, weren't they also due to make a filing which hadn't been done as of Friday?
I think it was about this money and getting access to this money with some sort of arrangement to coordinate and satisfy the debtors that they had a plan. So, but obviously with the conversation about the merger as a potential way to secure the remaining funding, talk about merger potentials increased. Right? People are now very much once again saying, are they in Frontier going to finally figure their shit out?
What do you I mean, do you think Frontier is looking at this going, oh, this is a good buy? Like, or
it's all about the price, right?
Yeah. For me, it's hard because like we talked about them. It's not really a lot of assets because they don't own a lot of planes.
Yeah.
But I guess they would take over the leases.
But why do you need to buy the airline to take over the leases?
Yeah.
Right. You're absorbing risk at that point versus just going to the lessors and say, if these planes come back, we want them.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Any thoughts on that, Seth? Like, why would they? Is there a reason? Or is this kind of one of those things like it just, we don't know the heads of the Frontier C-suite?
Yeah. I mean, so at this point, if you buy Spirit, you get the crew, right? Pilots and flight attendants come with. Which is good news, bad news. There's a large number of people, but they comes also with some baggage of existing contracts and a furlough situation and integrating seniority lists and all that versus letting it die and just, you know, having a hiring session, hiring all those people fresh. Now, are you more likely to keep some of them if it's an integrated seniority rather than them having to start over at the bottom of the list? Probably. But I could see that being part of the discussion. Probably nothing with route authorities that they need to worry about because Frontier has plenty of those. I don't think Spirit has. Spirit probably has some more stuff in Central and South America, but I don't think any of those would be hard to get if Frontier needed to do that or wanted to keep them flying. Gates in certain places arguably is an asset that you sort of would have to buy the airline to keep. But other than... say like LaGuardia and Fort Lauderdale, are there any places where Spirit is that Frontier really wants?
I mean, as we learned in Chicago, Frontier could buy some of those gate assets now. That's without true. Having to buy them.
Well, I mean, without having to buy the whole airline, but
yeah.
What did they pay? They paid $30 million a gate, right?
Was it $30 million a gate or for both gates?
I thought it was 30 per, but if you buy the whole airline for, you know, $500 million, and I don't know what the real number is. I don't know what the number is going to be that maybe comes along. Like, at some point, you get a discount for buying the whole thing versus buying gate piecemeal.
Right, but you're also inheriting a lot of stuff, too, if you buy the whole thing.
Right, all the crap that comes with that.
And on top of this, Frontier, right, didn't they just announce a new CEO and Biffle is out as CEO?
Yes.
$30 million for two gates.
Okay. Well, we were going to talk about in the later topics, but yes.
Oh, sorry. I didn't even notice.
Yeah,
I did. Yeah, but I think, is that a signal from Frontier? And we can talk about it more in the after show, but like, isn't that a signal like people want movement on this from like Frontier board?
It's an excellent question. We should talk about that later.
Okay. Stick around if you're a Patreon subscriber. Viva and Volaris are merging
in Mexico.
So this is Viva Aerobus and just Volaris is the name of the other airline.
Both Viva is actually just Viva now.
Is it really?
Yeah, because Viva was the full name of one that was in Costa Rica or El Salvador, some further south. Mm-hmm. And then that closed down. And so Viva Aerobus was able to just be Viva now.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Yes.
So they're two low cost. I'll call them low cost airlines.
Yeah.
And they're going to create a very large, they would become the largest domestic carrier.
I feel like I want to say Volaris already was,
okay.
But I'm trying to pull up that data now. Viva is in for domestic operations. Both of them are significantly larger than Aeromexico.
Wow. Okay.
Combined, I'm looking at it, the 2-week span starting today through New Year's through January 3rd. There are 19,000 domestic flights scheduled between the two of them. There are 13,300 of them. So they're 2/3 of the domestic operation in total.
Wow.
And Aeromexico is just under 5,000. So Aeromexico is just under 25%. And then there's a couple other stragglers. So in a truly domestic environment, those two are massive. Even transborder, Viva Aerobus just starting in Mexico, but, you know, full transborder operations. There are more international flights and a lot more carriers, 30,000 total flights. Combined, the two of them are 15,000 of those. So combined, the two of them are half. Air Mexico is another 6,200, so call that 25% or 20%, right? 6,000 out of 1,000. And then you get American, United, and Delta are the next three, which combined those three airlines are 4,200 flights, 4,300 flights. So it's, yeah, Viva Aerobus and Volaris are huge. And Volaris is actually bigger than I thought. Volaris is right on Viva's tail in terms of total size, total operations, but very much low-cost carrier operations. The interesting part to me is they said they're going to keep them separate and operate them as separate brands.
Interesting. Why? What would be the benefit there?
I don't know. To trick the regulators into thinking that there's still going to be competition, I guess.
That's what I was going to ask, is it feels like the Mexican government would be the thing that stops all this.
Yes, I would expect so. But they've also been, I feel like the government there has been pretty aggressive in trying to, well, they wanted to bring Mexicana back, but also sort of a little bit laissez-faire about competition and stuff and just sort of letting the free market run.
And they're also, their hands are also tied with everything that's happened in Mexico City.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Which all that stuff is still a shit show.
You don't say.
I don't know what happened. There's a lawsuit at one point. I'm not sure what was going on there.
Yeah. I mean, it's to me, it's the interesting piece is like this would create kind of a massive domestic carrier within Mexico that I don't think Aeromexico could really compete with. Which is, I guess it's good. I just don't know. Does it eliminate competition from a pricing perspective? I don't know if the market can handle big price increases.
Also look at it like the Volaris was supposed to have a partnership with, not Volaris, Viva was supposed to have a partnership with Allegiant by now.
Yeah.
They're supposed to have a sort of transborder joint venture and share each other's resources and things like that. That hasn't come to fruition. So from
wasn't Volaris with Southwest or was that somebody else?
Those are all just interline deals, though, I feel like.
Okay, not an actual partnership.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So it is, that's interesting. Volaris has way more transborder flights to the United States than Viva does right now.
Mm.
More than double. So they are slightly different markets, but still both very heavily focused on the domestic operation.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's, I agree with you. Aeromexico would have a very hard time competing. The one place Aeromexico still sort of would be able to thrive is actual long haul service because they've got 787s and fly long haul and the others do not.
Yep.
But, you know, does it become a Pan Am problem of all you've got is long haul service and no domestic operations that you can fund and your entire system collapses?
Yeah, I mean,
especially because I mean, I have to double check, but I think other than Tokyo, I'm not sure Aeromexico operates anything long haul that doesn't have competition.
I think you might be right. And doesn't
Seoul?
Well, doesn't ANA fly Mexico City to Narita?
I don't think so.
I thought they did.
And doesn't Aeromexico fly to Seoul now?
Then they do. Yeah. I thought ANA did.
Let's see what I can find. But yeah, Amsterdam, there's competition.
Yeah, there's an ANA flight in the air right now.
Oh. But yeah, Paris has competition. Buenos Aires has competition. Rome has competition, although it's Neos, so maybe it doesn't count. Sao Paulo has competition. Seoul, they have on their own. Heathrow has competition, or London. Madrid has competition.
They're not operating Narita right now, Aeromexico.
Don't they do it via Tijuana?
Oh, that's right. It's Tijuana. It's an interesting one because ANA does it nonstop.
What is it flying?
Do they do it nonstop both directions?
I think so. I mean, they're doing it out of Mexico City right now.
Are they doing a 789?
788.
Interesting.
And Santiago also has competition. So yeah, except for the 2-day Asia, there's a lot of competition there. So anyway.
That leaves at 6 a.m. from Mexico City and gets in at 11:50 a.m. in Tokyo.
Plus one?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's an interesting one.
Well, it's like all the flights from Mexico are weirdly timed, right? Like all the westbound from Europe. Even the more than
like 2 a.m.
Yeah, we actually talked about that a couple weeks ago, right? Like it's the super late flights, or at least one of the banks is.
Weird ones. I think let's talk about two other things. So United, the only reason we came across this was Foz had sent me a note and said, hey, we're going to get on the last Dakar, Senegal to Dulles flight. Do you want to come?
Not the last, one of the last.
One of the last. He's like, do you want to come? I was like, oh, I'll start looking at flights. So I start looking at flights and I send Foz a note. I'm like, I can't find, like, on the date that you guys say you're going, they're not selling it. And he's like, well, it doesn't end until March 5th, so you're doing something wrong. And I start looking at all the dates between what Foz sent me and March 5th. Nothing's available except in January. Turns out United's ending Dakar service earlier than they originally announced.
Oopsie.
Originally March 6th and that's January 31st.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I guess we're not doing that.
Wah, wah, wah.
Honestly, we should have in January chosen to come back via Dakar.
It's not too late.
Oh, it's too late for me. I'm committed. Unless you want me to cancel. I'm committed.
The problem is it runs on Tuesdays. Like, I'm like, Monday I would have been able to do, but Tuesday's going to be hard.
Yeah, I have Monday off, so yeah. Yeah, anyways, that kind of sucks. It's didn't look like the Stockholm flight. It's just not coming back, so that's not a big deal. But I've never seen an airline end it earlier than they said.
Well, they did that with Brisbane.
Did they really?
Yeah. Brisbane, LA, right? They cut it off by weeks.
Really?
Last year.
It's kind of wild to me to think about it because it's a 7-6. It's not a high J-7-6. Do they just need the plane?
I think United is having a wide-body problem. So I was reading an article last week about their 777s. I didn't realize that 60-some-odd percent of the 777, Pratt & Whitney 777 fleet is owned by United, and they can't get spare engines at this point.
Yeah, it's a. I think we've talked about this, haven't we, Seth?
It was a while ago we talked about it, but yeah.
I think the problem again
because I think what Matt had a post about it with like because there was a bird strike or something and a return the other day.
And Pratt & Whitney engines are extremely difficult to get spare parts for. They can't even find full engines right now, really. And United has, like you said, a lot of Pratt & Whitney planes.
I mean, the bulk of the 777s are Pratt & Whitney, right? Only 22 are GE.
Yeah.
Of the 200s, the 300s are all GE.
Yep.
So I think we're going to see a premature, or maybe not premature, but an accelerated retirement of the 777s if they can't get engines.
And replaced with what? 789s? 7810s?
Well, I think that's the challenge, right? Like they're shuffling planes around where they would like to fly a 777, but can be done by a 763, will now be done by a 763.
And then put the 772s on longer haul stuff that they need, that needs the GE engine. Yeah.
Or, well, not necessarily the GE engine, right? But just if they take five 777-200s out, they've just added their engine, 10 engines to their inventory.
No, that's true. Yeah.
So, like, you might have some routes where they need the seat count or the range, right? Where they'll keep the 777s, but things that are on the fence might just get downgauged until the 78s, they get more 78s.
Does this mean they take all the A's, like the 77As, out of service?
It's possible.
Like all the old, we call them the slave ships, go away?
It's possible. They did take two out recently.
Yeah, the oldest in the fleet is gone. Oh, the original 777's gone.
Yep.
It's in the desert. So, yeah, it's an interesting problem. Who would have thought we're at a place where you're like, we don't have enough engine parts?
The question is, can they swap any of them with GE engines?
That's got to be a different mount, right? It's a different geometry on the engine.
I can't imagine swapping that.
I know the 7-8s is possible. I don't know if it's possible in the 777s.
Could you imagine running one GE and one Pratt & Whitney, one on each side?
I imagine you have to match them because the engine control module.
Oh, circular runways.
Yes. This solves everything.
I'm going to make Laws cry.
Look, kids, Big Ben. Look, kids, Parliament.
Hey, you just made Brendan's day. Yeah.
Completely off target, off topic. Chevy Chase just did a viewing of Christmas Vacation and a talk afterwards.
Really? Where?
In New Jersey.
Oh, that's cool. And then the last thing I want to talk about real quick is, and I want to do this in the main show just so it's accessible to everybody. So Portland, I wrote a post. I think we talked about it on the show. Portland's been talking about getting Korean service for a long time. And I'm like, why are you so focused on Korean? Like you're obsessed with Korean. Get over it. He's not into you. And apparently people are like, now there's been another blog post by the Port of Portland in November saying, yes, Korean's coming. It'll be like 2026, 2027. And I'm still very skeptical. And there's people who are convinced that because of the merger with Asiana, that's the reason Korean hasn't started service yet. That doesn't pass the test, the smell test.
Yeah. Best I can figure and what I remember, there's no restrictions on new service launches.
I couldn't find anything. Yeah, in the United States, I could find anything.
Right, no divestitures or anything. Like, there's some stuff to Europe and some cargo things. But also, what's their fleet situation, right? Like, what's their order book look like? I'm guessing that's going to be more of an issue than anything else.
And my point to people was, they already have Asiana and Korean service to Seattle. If Korean was like, oh yeah, it'd be a good idea to have PDX on our repertoire, they could pull the Korean flight from Seattle and put it in Portland if they want it.
Basically, move either one of them. They could split the pair.
Yeah, split the pair. Like, if it was really that advantageous, the problem is Seattle's more advantageous for them, and they're not going to do that. Same thing, it's in San Francisco. You could do it. You could do it at LAX. I mean, they've got multiple services at a bunch of West Coast locations. They could move one of those if they really wanted to. I don't think there's money in it for them. Like, I think they see a three-day-a-week or four-day-a-week service to PDX is, like, maybe not profitable. I don't know.
I think the problem is aircraft density. I think they don't have a plane that's small enough to do it right now.
Because they don't have 788s, right? They only have 789s. It's like the smallest, or an A330 maybe.
But the 330s are in a regional config, right?
Oh, that's right. Yep, good point.
So they can't really use the 330s. Because even when, who was the last person who flew to Seoul? Even Tokyo, right? Delta was doing a 76 at one point.
Delta was down to a 76. Seoul, we never got service. I mean, it was back when in Northwest days, early Delta days.
Yeah, the MD-11s way back when. Yeah. So I was thinking Tokyo, but at one point that was down to a 76, and clearly the market couldn't support that altogether.
Well, that was a whole convoluted thing with the Haneda, you know, trying to get Haneda slots, and then they were using PDX as like a dangle to say we want to get it, and they were charging $10,000 for a one way business class ticket, and it was like a whole.
But if there were 150 people willing to pay for Tokyo Portland, someone else would have started that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm still convinced the best bet for us as an airport, as a city, is JAL and Alaska. You know, Alaska gets on the JV and we get a JAL 788 three or four times a week. Or Zip Air comes in and does four to five times a week. And that's our nonstop service to Tokyo. To me, that's the only way it makes sense.
Yeah, just looking at the order book, they've got Korean did just sign 100 aircraft order with Boeing in August. Deliveries over the next like 10 to 12 years. So it's a long way out. Some stuff will come sooner, but it's 777X and 7810s.
Yeah, those aren't coming to PDX.
No.
Maybe three times a week, like KLM service.
It's a big plane even for that, but yeah.
I mean, I think you could justify it maybe with cargo three times a week. It probably would kill the Cathay cargo only flight that does LA, Portland, Anchorage, Hong Kong. But yeah, I don't know. It's anyway, all that to say, I think the port is still pursuing the wrong things. I really need to sit in on more port meetings just to hear what the thinking is. But yeah. Anyway, all right. You guys got anything else you want to talk about?
Nah.
No.
Awesome. Well, listeners, thank you for supporting and listening to the show. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week. Happy travels.
Take care.
See you later.